game recaps, athlete interviews, and everything high school baseball, softball, and lacrosse. It's Bats and Sticks with Dave Rudin, live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Bats and Sticks. I'm Dave Rudin. We're brought to you by Duchess Restaurants, fresh food served fast. FCAC Championship Week is in the books, and state playoffs begin tomorrow. Have a good show for you today. We're going to focus on baseball and girls lacrosse coming up in a little while. Always one of my most popular guests, and we have a lot to talk about. Her team just won 21st FCAC title in girls lacrosse, and that's Darianne's Lisa Lindley. We're also going to be talking to two of the heroes from the Trumbull baseball team, which won a FCAC title for the second time in 3 years with an 8-6 win over Fairfield Ludlow, and MVP Andrew Valentino and Alex Roth, who had the game-winning hit, will be with us. And to help me break down all the baseball news and look at the FCAC and look at the state playoffs coming up is my co-host Sean Ratchford. Ratch, how you doing?
Doing extremely well on the beautiful last day of May.
What's going up in Danbury and Parks and Rec today? Anything big?
I'm actually at the escaping. I'm up at the Elephant's Trunk trying to be incognito. So there's always stuff. Our lake is open. We got a lot of softball stuff going on. So a lot of things and over 40 baseball.
Wow. Celebrity like you, it's hard to go incognito. 8-6 Trumbull over Ludlow. Kind of a wild roller coaster game where Trumbull went up to scored four runs in the first inning, went up 5-0. Then in the fifth and sixth innings, Ludlow puts up three runs apiece and takes a 6-5 lead. Trumbull comes right back with a run in the bottom half of the sixth and in the fifth, and then gets a two-run single with the bases loaded and two outs by Alex Roth. I don't think there's a big surprise that Trumbull won the championship. They had a great season. They're 19-4. Three of those losses came in a four-game streak at midseason, but combination of hitting and pitching, they were one of the co-favorites, and they were the hot team for 5 days.
Yeah, you got to love the mindset that we're not going to let the score dictate how we play. You're up five runs, and all of a sudden the other team puts a six spot up in two innings. Now you're starting to doubt yourself. Buddy, Tim, and Phil did a great job, and it's a testament to their kids that the score is not going to define how we play. We're going to take it one bat at a time. They did just that, and baseball provided the opportunities, and bang, you have a single that placed the winning run. I love it.
And this is a team that's no stranger to overcoming tough situations. In the quarterfinals, we talked about last week, they fell behind 6-2 in the bottom of the eighth and managed to score four runs to tie the game and then win it in the ninth. So a combination of a really top offense. I think they're hitting .320 as a team. And we talked about overcoming adversity where they lost Schulke for the year after he had only pitched six innings. And then Andrew Valentino, a good part of the year, he just returned 2 weeks ago to the mound. He'd been hitting all year. And he was the starting pitcher, and he had four hits in the game and won the MVP award with his bat.
Yeah, I watched you interview him a couple times this year on your podcast, and I watched you interview a couple of the other players. What I love, is their attitude. They talk about team, team, team. They talk about the other players being able to trust them. That's a great thing to do. When you can coach a team that trusts each other, that's able to hand the bat to the next guy, hey, look, I didn't get it done. You get it done. You get it done for us. And teams that can come back, you know, that's what we talked about when I coached. Can you win a one-run game? Can you come from behind and win? He's proven that he can do that. You know, the team has proven they can do all that. Those are recipes for making good runs, for being able to win every game that you play.
And a testament to Ludlow as well. They also had a tough quarterfinal game against St. Joe's that went extra innings. good pitching. A little bit of a surprise with the pitching staff that they had, that they gave up the runs and fell behind by so much early. But they found a way to get back into the game. I'm sure they're going to use that kind of momentum, even though they're disappointed with the outcome, to get started in the state playoffs. And, you know, good teams know how to win. And not a surprise that the two most recent FCAC champions got back to the final. Ludlow is the defending champion, and Trumbull won it 2 years ago.
Right, and it was great FCAC baseball. You had, you know, two games go extra innings. You had to come from behind in the finals. Ludlow, again, what he wrote on his webpage, attitude is everything. Sometimes words are nice to say, but they play that with an action. And that's what I love about Ken's teams. Attitude is everything. Again, I didn't get it done. Somebody on our team is going to get it done. They have the pitching, as you said, to make a long run in the States. Disappointed that we didn't win the FCAC. Disappointed we didn't win the Big East. But the big prize is still out there. You know, a national championship, a state championship. That's what you're selling your team when you have that disappointment.
I think one of the best things that happened with Ludlow took place in the field, but not during action. Did you happen to see, I didn't bring this up with you, did you happen to see the video I had of Dylan Davis after they had the walk-off win and in the semifinals, and then him going to walk up to the Darien second baseman who made a throwing error to lose the game, and he's down on his squatting position, and Dylan Davis made his way back from the celebration to go console him. I don't know if you saw that.
It was an amazing thing for you to have the presence of mind to see that, and it was an amazing act by that young man. I mean, that is class. I hope as a coach to have players that can learn stuff like that, that bring that to the team, because again, is it a game? It's a game. And when I'm playing that game, Dave, I want every piece of you. But when the game's over, we're human beings that may go to a local place and have a soda. We may see each other on the beach. We want to be friends. We want to reminisce about, oh, remember this, remember that. So unbelievable act. I'm glad that you were able to catch it on film.
Actually, that credit goes to my senior intern from Ridgefield, Zach Trenk, who sent me that video. I was at a different game. We had four games going on. And he just posted the celebration. I don't even know if he saw what happened. And I was just really busy that night. And all of a sudden, I'm getting these messages sent to me via Instagram. You know, what a class act and all of that. And then I went back and watched the video and kind of re-edited it. And then I actually went to practice the next day and talked to him about it. And, you know, it's those kind of things that, it used to just be commonplace and wasn't a real surprise. And the way society's changed, maybe that's not the norm anymore. And somebody does something like that, it stands out a little bit more. But it makes you feel good about the future when you see kids like that. You've gotten to coach them. I've gotten to write about them. And we have a lot of good kids in the FSEC, and Dylan Davis was the face of that this week.
Oh, absolutely. And again, the weird thing in coaching is you want to remember games. But what you really remember is your players, how they played, how they competed, the things they did on and off the field. That's the weird part of coaching, because, again, when you're out there battling, man, do I want to beat somebody? But the bottom line is, acts like this remind you that people are great, people can be very good, and here's a young man who chose to take that moment and pick somebody up who had, you know, made a mistake, who had made an error. Hats off to Dylan.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about the state playoffs, which begin tomorrow. Number one, if you're Trumbull and you're coming right off that high on Thursday of winning a championship and sort of accomplishing one of your end goals, how hard is it to then come right back in the state playoffs and turn it back on again? We've seen in a lot of sports FCAC champions go down in the first round because it's really hard from an emotional standpoint to do that.
It's really hard. And, you know, Jack talked about it two shows ago, winning the FCX and then going and bowing out in the first round. I'm sure that Phil, Buddy, and Tim have done a great job of, hey, break the rearview mirror. What's behind us is behind us. That accomplishment is in the bank. Now we have bigger fish to fry. We want two home games, and then we want to get on the bus three times. That is our new measure of success. And again, with the way the things I've heard, the things I've read about this team is ready to do that. They're ready to turn the page. For some kids, it's the accomplishment of winning the FCX. For this team, I think they're hungry to have more. And I know those guys, those coaches are going to sell that because they're teacher coaches.
We talk again. Another thing is just with a state tournament, feeling like you're really in a state tournament. And you look at some of the draws. Staples, if they have success, is going to play a bunch of schools from outside the FCAC. And then you look at Trumbull. They have to play Stanford in the first round. They could be looking, if they get to the quarterfinals, at the Ward-New Canaan winner, assuming Ward-New Canaan get past the first round, and that could be a second-round meeting. How big a difference is it to play a state, play teams you're not familiar with from outside the league and make it really feel like a state tournament?
I love playing teams from outside, and I can't speak for the other coaches, but I'm pretty sure they would rather see somebody else other than them. It's exciting because, again, you may not have played the summer with the young man. You may not have read the paper. You may not have seen him on the Rudin report. These are kids that you're not going to know. There's a different element to that. But again, Phil's job is to get them to forget about what they accomplished and get them to look at one game at a time. We're not looking at three games in and we might play Ward. Let's win today. Let's beat Stanford. Whoever wins the next game, that's who our next opponent is. Try to take it one team at a time, really one pitch at a time. If you can play one pitch at a time, you have a great chance with the pitching and the hitting he has to win any game you're playing.
That kind of leads into a strategic element that coaches face in the state playoffs. The first two rounds are Monday and Tuesday. You're coming right back. Ostensibly, and seeding is misleading in a baseball tournament, because if you have one really good pitcher, that player can carry you at least to an early round win. I know some coaches, it's survive in advance. You always worry about today. That's kind of the way I always am. And then I know there are some coaches who think about, I don't know if my number two pitcher could win in the second round, so I'm going to roll the dice that I'm going to win my first round game with my number two pitcher and save my number one for the second round. What's your feeling on that?
That's a million-dollar question, and I've been on both sides of the question you asked. To get into the FCAC, to be in my first FCAC final, we had a pitcher, our number one, against West Hill, back when West Hill was loaded, and we won that game, and then we tried to figure out what we were going to do against Greenwich in the finals. I personally, as I've gotten, more experience in the coaching, I need to win today. I win today. I figure out tomorrow. You and I talked off the air. Give me the Jimmy Valvano. All right. Just win, baby, win. And a little Al Davis, and take today's win. We'll figure out how we're going to deal with tomorrow, because you can save your number one and never get a chance to use him. Unfortunately, I've seen coaches that have done that, and then a kid never has a chance to pitch in a state tournament. So pitch him today, figure it out tomorrow. My philosophy.
Now, I agree, too. If you don't get to the second round, it doesn't really matter. Get past the first round and then see what happens. We've talked about the Trumbull baseball team, a second title in 3 years, and we're going to take a break. And on the other side, Andrew Valentino and Alex Roth from the Eagles. You're listening to Bats and Sticks on WICC.
Everything you need to know about high school baseball, softball, and lacrosse. The Rudin Report presents Bats and Sticks with Dave Rudin. Now on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back, and we've been talking about the Trumbull baseball team. 8-6 win on Thursday over Fairfield Ludlow for its second title in 3 years. And two of what was a group of heroes in that game join us right now, Andrew Valentino and Alex Roth. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good, how are you? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you, too. I hadn't missed the game, unfortunately. Tell us a little bit about, first of all, how's it feel to get that second title in 3 years?
It's honestly a privilege. I mean, it was great. The boys all came together. We had our pregame speeches. We had an on-field BP before. We're all, like, hyping each other up, but keeping our cool. Everyone wasn't too stressed. It was great. Like, I can't even explain it in words. It was amazing.
Yeah, and to add on to that, I mean, it's just an amazing group of kids, and coaching staff did a great job preparing us, so nobody really felt that pressure. We were all ready. And there's no other group we'd want to do it with. It was just great being on the field in that moment and just enjoying ourselves because it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, so it's awesome.
Talk a little bit about the heart you guys showed during this tournament. We talked about on the show last week your quarterfinal game where you're down 6-2 in the bottom of the eighth inning. I'm sure people are saying, okay, we're going to have a huge upset here. And you guys come back and tie the game and then win it in the ninth inning. You dominated a very good New Canaan team in the semifinals, and then you go from having a 5-0 lead to falling behind 6-5, which can be very disheartening. But you guys come right back and tie the game in the bottom of the fifth inning, and then Alex, you deliver the game winning hit in the bottom of the sixth. What's it say about the kind of heart that you two and the rest of your team has?
I mean, we just fight and fight. It's such a special thing with this group. We never give up. And that Norwalk game, it was crazy how it went down. I mean, they're up 6-2. It's the last inning. We have one out on us. We all kept the energy up. We never put our heads down. You know, we kept fighting and fighting and kept the momentum in the semis and finals. And, yeah.
Yeah, to add on to that as well, I think that Norwalk game really showed, like, who we are as a team, how we were able to keep our energy up and stay together, like, even though we're down 6-2, I mean, it's very easy for, like, other teams to, like, you know, basically give up at that point, but everybody kept their heads up, they stayed loud in the dugout, and everybody did their job. It was every man up, it was awesome. Then in the New Canaan game, great team over there, they threw a really good pitcher, and everybody did their jobs. Like I said, those were great team wins, and you know, in the last game, we had so comfortable having Andrew on the mound. When he's pitching, I have no doubt in my mind that we're gonna fight and we're gonna work behind him, and it's just awesome.
That's been a big lift having Andrew back on the mound. Alex, you're one of the great stories of the spring season. You played as a freshman. We've talked about you took the next 2 years off. You decided to come back this year. Your status is uncertain until the final day of tryouts when Phil Pacelli, your coach, decided he's going to keep you on the team. You had one of the biggest game-winning hits of the regular season, when your home run to beat Fairfield Ward. You come up in the bottom of the sixth, bases loaded, two outs, tie game. What's going through your mind and what's that feeling like when you deliver?
When I was on deck, I mean, a lot of people might say this sounds like a lie, but I had a feeling I was going to get up in that moment. I know Eric Story bats in front of me, and that kid is always getting on base. So I had a feeling I was going to get up to the plate and have an opportunity to come through. And when I first got up there, I knew I was taking a strike because I didn't want to end the inning on a first pitch swinging, you know, fly out or something. Talked to Coach Tvarczyk before that bat, and he told me to take one to see one and not – you know, you're not end the inning really quick. So I took the first pitch, and then second pitch was a curve. I got outside low curveball, and I just wanted to go the other way or go up the middle with it. And I was able to do so, and it felt amazing to come through in the moment. Like, felt so much pressure, and to be able to come through for our team is just, it's an awesome feeling.
Rach, jump on in.
Alex and Andrew, congratulations. I love how you guys play the game. I love that you fight. You got the cliches, just win from Belichick. You got the Colby on preparation. You're a two-sport athlete, Alex. You did a reverse Michael Jordan. You took 2 years off to baseball to play basketball. now that you've had success, do you hope to play college basketball or college baseball?
So I committed to Delaware for academics, but if I was to choose, honestly, I feel like I would have a better opportunity playing baseball based off of how this has went recently. I love basketball just as much, but I've had so much fun this season, and it's something that I'll never be able to recreate moments like these. Like, it's going to be they're going to be memories soon. It's going to be something I'll miss deeply.
Excellent. Those 2 years off, did they make you hungrier for the game? Did they make you appreciate the game? How did that time off help you in your senior year as a captain?
It made me appreciate the game a lot more, because being away from it, it just made me realize how much I missed it, how much I missed the friendships I've made, the experiences, the moments. It made me realize how much the game really meant to me growing up, and I wanted to come back to fulfill that inner little me. Like, when I was younger, I grew up playing, and I wanted to come back and do that for myself, because that game was it's a big piece of my childhood, and being able to come back is just a big moment, and it's awesome.
You did it, Andrew. You've had a successor stellar baseball career going back to 10 years old. You're 10 years old. You go 5-for-7 down at USA Baseball. A lot of kids have success on a little field and struggle when they get to the big field. How were you able to make that transition so you can help some of the other kids that may be struggling going from one to the other?
Well, nothing changes. You're still playing the sport you love. When I was 12, I did play up with 13U, so I got a little bit like ahead of kids my age. Props go to the Grind Baseball Organization. They helped me a lot with that. And yeah, it's just, you got to keep your confidence. Nothing's changing. You're still playing the sport you love. And yeah.
What are you hoping to do next year? I know you've committed. You want to share with people where you committed and what you're going to do?
I committed to East Carolina University,
who's had a great tournament so far. Just knocked out.
Yeah.
Who did they just knock out?
They knocked out Tennessee.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So that's fantastic. And you hope to play the field there. You hope to pitch. What are you going to do down there?
I'm going to be a pitcher.
That's excellent. They have a great history of producing very good pitching. Everybody may know the story. Do you know the story about their coach? Do you want to share that, about the coach that won it and unfortunately passed?
Oh yeah, he had a disease. They have
Lou Gehrig.
I'm not sure about the full story, but I've heard about it.
Yeah, that's a great place to go. It's big time baseball. That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Hey guys, state playoffs begin tomorrow. You're coming off a win. It's so hard to, from an emotional standpoint, to come off to that high, to feel like you got to do it all over again. What's the mood? I know your coach hasn't been pumping you up the last 3 days. I'm sure he's been getting you guys refocused. Haven't been around you this year. I have a sense you guys aren't going to have too much difficulty turning it back on.
I kind of have a bitter taste in my mouth. My freshman year, we won FCX, got eliminated first round. Last year, we got eliminated first round in FCX and state, so I totally just I don't want that to happen again. Like, me and other captains and everyone, the seniors, were pushing these guys. Like, we want to win this thing. Like, our season isn't over just because we win FCX. Like, we still want this thing really bad.
Okay, guys. Well, congratulations on part one. You guys have, the two of you and the rest of your team, showed the hearts of a champion, and you came away with one title. And I wish you best of luck going after number two. I'm sure I'll be seeing you somewhere down the road, and thanks for taking a little time here to talk with us.
Of course, thank you very much.
Okay, good luck, guys.
Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
That's Andrew Valentino and Alex Roth. Rach, you get the rest of the day off. I'm going to let you go back to being incognito, which I find hard to believe, and I'm going to change sports. So thanks a lot for all you do.
She's up there with Anson Dorian. That's a phenomenal, phenomenal achievement. So enjoy the rest of the day and your interview. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Ratch. That's Sean Ratchford. We're going to take a break. And on the other side, Darianne Gross, the cross coach, Lisa Lindley. You're listening to Bats and Sticks on WICC.
The Rooten Report Live presents Bats and Sticks, a look at Connecticut high school baseball, softball, and lacrosse with Dave Rooten on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to make the transition from baseball to girls lacrosse. There's so much to talk about that if I did a full introduction of all her accomplishments, it would fill up 10 minutes, so suffice it to say, she's got 563 career wins, the most recent 21st FCAC title for the Darianne girls lacrosse team after an impressive 13-3 win over New Canaan in the finals Thursday. And joining me is Coach Lisa Lindley. Lisa, how you doing?
Good, Dave. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. You're the toughest critic I know about your own team's performance, and you had smiles on your face, the semifinals and the final, and rightfully so. You couldn't have asked much more from your girls in the way they played in the tournament.
Absolutely. I thought they played in both games outstanding. Every aspect of our game, from the draw to circle play to defense to offense, was exactly what I asked of them, and they certainly delivered.
One of the things, and there's so much that's impressed about this team, is the killer instinct right off the bat. Bottom line is you're a heavy favorite. You've got the most talent. Your closest game in state has been an equal win over Wilton. And you come out against Greenwich in the semifinals and New Canaan, and you did it. I saw your regular season games with Wilton and New Canaan. And in all those games, you've scored at least the first seven goals of the game. It's real hard against you to come back from a seven-goal deficit. Your team just has a killer instinct right off the bat.
Yes, I think they've done a very good job this year of that. And we definitely talk a lot about tempo and the importance of setting the tempo in whatever game that we're playing. I think our early schedule against New York teams certainly got us ready and prepared to carry out that tempo when we came in state, because the New York teams are definitely challenging and were challenging for us. You know, we had many one goal victories, but I think it certainly prepared us for how we came out against our Connecticut opponents.
I think the launching pad for this team's success was one of those games, second of the season against St. Anthony's, which was number one in the country, and they're number right. Three right now, right behind you. You're number two, and you fall behind right off the bat, 2-0, and I was watching the stream of the game, and then you come back, you take a big lead. St. Anthony's ties the game up in the final seconds, and you go to the second overtime, and Anna Von Kennel sets up Quinn Chandler for the game winner. You end a 51-game winning streak. I think it was right then and there that you look back on all this team has done. That was the launching pad. You agree?
Yes, absolutely. In that game, we had a lot of perseverance, and as you said, we went up by quite a bit, and then we let them back in the game, and then we won in overtime, which was amazing.
Has this team surprised you a lot? I talked with you a few days before the season started, and you knew you had a good team. I don't know if you thought it was going to be this good. You set up a real challenging schedule. You had a team with two freshman goalies. You had a lot of new starters. You graduated a really talented senior class. I think you knew you were going to have a good team, but did you think you'd be sitting here right now with your schedule undefeated, number two in the country?
Absolutely not. And I think there's a couple things playing into that. I think first and foremost, my captains have done an amazing job leading this team. And they really have taken it upon themselves to set the tone and expectations of everyone in the other classes. The second and third things the team has really demonstrated is grit and resilience. You know, I hope we instill those qualities each year, but you really don't know if you have grit or resilience until you're put into a situation where you have to show that. And I think these kids have shown that in spades throughout the season.
I'll let you shout out the captains. I know Anavon Kennel, Cameron Picorni, Haven Moneypenny's as a captain too, right?
Yep. And James Lesky.
Okay.
Yep.
Those are four. talk a little bit about Anna. I had her on a couple weeks ago. She's going to play in Florida, and she's just had a great career and a great season.
I mean, Anna is a tremendous talent. She has speed, aggressiveness. She's great on both ends. She's amazing in between the 30s. She's done everything and beyond what I've asked of her all 4 years. She's a true leader and so well respected from her teammates. And she's gotten a lot of accolades throughout her high school career, and I anticipate that she's going to get quite a bit more when the season comes to an end.
Yeah, I have a feeling Player of the Year, we could be looking at a repeat. I'm going to get back to her in a little bit. You got the state playoffs coming up, and you look at the draw, and it could be a repeat of the FCAC. You have a good chance of playing Greenwich again in the semifinals. I don't know a lot about Concord, which is the number 4 seed. And then you get to the finals, and you're probably looking again at the Wilton-New Canaan winner.
Right.
We're dealing with high school kids, and they've been blowing everybody out. How do you get them to stay focused and keep doing what they've been doing?
Well, we talked about this today. We had practice this morning, and what I said to them was, you know, look, we got 2 weeks left. You have my word that I'm going to keep practices short but intense, and I need your word that when you're here, you're totally here. And I think, you know, keeping it fresh, and, you know, we never talk about, like, being undefeated or, you know, beating X, Y, and Z down the line. We take it one game at a time, and I think that's what, as a coaching staff, we've done a very good job of. And, you know, we'll be prepared to play, whether it's Greenwich or Concord. Concord's very good. I don't want to overlook them. And, you know, if we play against Concord or Greenwich and hopefully beat them, we're looking at playing Wilton or New Canaan again, which it is what it is. You know, the FCAC has traditionally been the best league in the state, and we certainly have always had the top two or three or four teams in the state. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Now, with the way your girls have been focused and the way they've started out against their in-state opponents, I'll be surprised if lack of focus is an issue. There's a lot I want to talk to you about, so beyond this year's team. So this is a good point. Let's take a break and come back, and I want to talk about shot clock. I want to talk about Chloe Humphrey and a few other things. So we're going to take a break right now. You're listening to Bats and Sticks on WICC.
Let's hear what Dave Rudin has to say about this week in high school baseball, softball, and lacrosse. You're listening to Bats and Sticks on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Okay, we're back with Darian, Coach Lisa Lindley. It wouldn't be fun having you on as much fun if we didn't have I don't want to say a controversial, because it shouldn't be a controversial topic, but something all coaches, boys and girls, have been talking about, and that's a shot clock. We're one of the few states that does not have a shot clock. They use it when you play out-of-state games. Those teams are used to using a shot clock, the college game shot clock. I'm giving you the forum. Make your point. Make your case.
Well, the biggest thing is whether you're talking about boys or girls, it's not advancing our sport. It's not making it enjoyable to watch. It certainly can be more enjoyable to watch when there's a shot clock. I also feel like it's not preparing our players for what they're going to be given or, you know, how it's going to be in college. So at the end of the day, I think we as coaches and as an association, we need to prepare these kids for what they're going to do at the next level. I get it that the CIAC has to consider expense, but I think at least in the FCAC, where I know every school has a football clock where they have the actual timer and they can use it, I think that's a cop-out. Like, I think, you know, if it's an expense in terms of getting someone to run it, I know plenty of people at Darien High School, I could ask students to run the clock, give them a little course and, you know, pay them $50 a game. That would be easy. At a minimum, what I would hope is, okay, this isn't going to be passed in the next 2 to 3 years. But give schools a choice. When New York schools come to play me, when Maryland schools come to play me, let me use a shot clock, because that's what I'm running into now. I have these schools. I have a great schedule, probably the best schedule in the nation in terms of hard. And these schools don't want to come to Darien because I can't play with a shot clock. Because if I play with a shot clock, it won't count toward my overall schedule for the CIAC. So then I get dinged on standings for the state tournament. So, you know, I would hope that we could come up with some type of solution. And I hope that something gets in the works before I retire from coaching. I was watching a boys game, and I won't say the two teams that were playing, but it was the boringest lacrosse game that I've ever witnessed. It was 8 to 10 minute possessions, and I was like, how is this enjoyable for A, the players, and B, the fans? It isn't.
I go back, and I think I brought this up to you recently, and I always go back to the 2017 state championship, and it was Darien boys against Ridgefield. And I remember walking on the field, and I went up first to Roy Colsey, the Ridgefield coach, said hello, and he looked at me, he smiled, he said, "You're going to hate the way we play today." And I said, "You know, what are you talking about?" And he knew that they were a decided underdog, and the only way they had a chance to beat Darien was to go into a delay and keep the ball away from Darien and try to win the draw and then eat clock. And that's basically what they did. I think they took a 7-1 lead, and Darien came back in a flurry and made it 7-6, but they held on and win. The other night, the New Canaan-Wilton girls semifinal, New Canaan played keep away. I don't blame them for doing it. They didn't do anything wrong. That's a rule. They took advantage of it. It was smart strategy, but it's frustrating, and you want to see teams not playing not to lose or to go into a delay. And plus just the fact that it hurts these top players for their futures.
No, absolutely. And I think you hit the point, playing not to lose. You know, I think that is, you know, is it great strategy? I don't know. That's not in my DNA. I never slow down. Like, I don't have my team slow down. Maybe I should, but I don't think it's teaching them the right way to play the game. You know, I don't know. I think our sport would be a lot better with the shot clock, you know, and not to mention the players love playing with the shot clock. We went down to Maryland this year and we played not only shot clock, but college rules where the defenders can go through the crease. And that's another thing. That's an easy rule change for high school, right? That's huge. It allows defenders to be a little bit more aggressive. They're not at a disadvantage. But my point, getting back to the Maryland game, is whether it's Maryland or when we went to Long Island, all our Long Island games, my kids love that. They love the fact that, hey, you know, we got to create offense within a set amount of time and get shots on goal to get a reset. That's making you better.
And this, for everyone out there, this isn't a Lisa Lindley issue. This is a lacrosse issue, because boys coaches, the other top girls coaches, they're all telling me to write a story. We've got to do something about it. This is a universal feeling. And lacrosse is played as well here as it is anywhere else in the country. And even the Tier 2 teams in the FCAC, you got the Wards, the Ludlows, they're all sending kids to top college programs as well. So it's really just a universal thing, and hopefully it gets changed. Why don't we bounce over, because she's sort of become the face of women's lacrosse right now, and that's Chloe Humphrey at North Carolina. And she got her start with the Grizzlies. You're the owner of co-owner of the travel team, and a Darien alum. You talked to me about how you could tell early on, right off the bat, when you see somebody whether they got it or not, and you knew Chloe had it. But did you know that? I mean, I don't know how you could ever predict that what's happened to her would ever happen with anybody, where she's become the darling of women's lacrosse.
Well, you're right. You can't predict that, but she did have a few intangible things that she had the possibility of becoming as big as she did. Like, for instance, she has amazing hands, right? Like, right, left, really quick with her hand speed and her foot speed, her change of direction. Her shot, both righty and lefty, are rockets. She has several different, like, release points. The biggest thing that stands, you know, Chloe apart from others is she scores innately, meaning she knows where she is at any given time. She doesn't have to look at the net. Like, she knows well before she receives that ball where that ball is going in the back of the net. So those are all things that I knew she had. The only question I had going into college was her size. I didn't know if that was going to be an issue because of her history of injuries. But I think you saw in the last two seasons, you know, Chloe is tough as nails. She can get hit. She can get thrown on the ground, and she's going to take it and be resilient and bounce back. She has a great personality, and I think that's what makes her also very attractive in terms of being the face for women's lacrosse. And she's an attractive person. So, you know, all those things, she deserves everything that's come her way.
How much fun is it for you to see this?
I mean, it's a lot. I'm very proud of her, obviously. But I'm also, like, with all her success, I think I'm most proud of her because she's remained humble. She's a very humble person, and I think that's what even makes it even, like, 10 times better is she's not a bragger. She doesn't go out of her way to say, hey, look how great I am. So I really, for me personally, that's what I respect the most from her, or of her.
One other thing I want to talk about, and one of the things I respect most about you, is you with the Grizzlies, and you play a big part in the recruiting, helping advise your players, both Darian and Grizzlies, and you have a lot of ties to the colleges, and you just seem to know which kid is going to go, you know, should end up at the right place. You're a brutally honest person, and you're going to tell somebody that might want to go to a certain school, you know, you could go there, but you're not going to play there. You really should go here. How does that all work in terms of where you match the player to the school?
Well, sometimes, I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into that, right? To your point, I can steer them to a certain school where I think they'll be successful, but they on the flip side have to be receptive and want that type of school, right? So that's one. I think the biggest issue more recently is kids have set in their mind like a bunch of schools that they want to go to. I'll just use an example, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, right? And they may have Harvard, Yale, Princeton grades, but their lacrosse isn't at Harvard, Yale, Princeton level, right? So there's already a disconnect there. So then it's like talking to them about, okay, let's look at maybe if you are willing, maybe a little less academic school, like a Patriot League school, a Colgate, a Lafayette, a Lehigh, where it matches your playing level. You know, some kids are receptive to that, some kids aren't. It's never the kids who have the great, great talent. Placing those kids are easy, right? Because they have a choice of where they want to go. It's always the middle of the road kids who I really have to work hard to get interest in them. And I can get interest for them, but sometimes those kids or their parents have no interest in the schools that are interested in them. So then it becomes like, okay, well, we got to go back to the drawing board, and maybe we're looking at D3 schools where you're higher academics, but not, you know, maybe the level of lacrosse is not as high as D1.
Well, you timed that perfectly. Lisa, I could have you on for a whole show, but thanks a lot for taking time. I have a feeling I'll see you in 2 weeks in the state championship game.
All right, Dave. Thank you so much.
That's Lisa Lindley, and that's this week's episode of Bats and Sticks. Thanks to all my guests. We're brought to you by Duchess Restaurants, fresh food served fast. Thanks to Tom Colangelo. Have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next Sunday.